Is this good enough? Yeah, good. Excellent. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity to speak here. I'm speaking on behalf of my colleague Kevin Hoss and Endel Yarvi, who were ostensibly going to be here but got called away to different travels this summer. This work that I'm going to present is part of a larger program whose goal is to develop sort of a process to performance modeling, I guess simulation set of tools that allows you to virtually process a text tool and bring it all the way to performance prediction, and even use that as a feedstock to a homogenized like a UQ model. But what I'm going to talk about here is very simple, and it's our modeling at the 3D level. Sort of basic here, and acknowledge our colleague Eric Zhu and Carl Poplar for doing the virtual modeling and then the actual tests. Let's see if this works. Start with some analysis method descriptions, just really briefly. I don't want to go into too much depth because there's a short time. How Kevin built the models. The models were all built by Kevin Hoss, except for the toe architecture model. And then just go into some results. So many of you in the audience already understand our modeling methodology for discrete damage. I think Frederick Laron mentioned a really good sort of description of this earlier, where in a UD laminated composite, acknowledging the existence of individual cracks matters in terms of how delaminations accumulate and things like that. And so our code is built from the ground up with that in mind, doing XM representations of transverse matrix cracks and their integration with delaminations. So the BSAM code is designed just for that application. Fiber damage is modeled with a CDM, fairly classical CDM approach, except for if we want to do a catastrophic fiber, then there's a stochastic method in there as well. Then we've developed this methodology that's embedded in our code called the independent mesh method. It's just a name we made up. But the idea there is that it offloads some of the complex meshing requirements that you would have in a traditional finite element approach. And I'll describe that a little bit more in detail. The next is our actual sort of virtual processing of the textiles. This is based on a digital chain method. Again, I might talk about a little bit more of that in a second. But the idea there is that you essentially virtually weave your textile. And then you can link that, you can pull off solids and then mesh those and link that to the BSAM code for progressive damage modeling. So to give you an example of what that would look like, right here, we have just a representation of the architecture in consideration. The architecture we're looking at here is a four-ply angle interlock, fully 3D woven part. So you can see in here by 3D woven, you see like the bottom layer of warps only cover one layer, but the next ones go over two, go under one, and so on. And so there's this continuous level of weaving all the way through the thickness. So you have some 3D reinforcement all the way through. This particular object was really interesting to work with because we had an experimental or a panel of this stuff. We laid it up, infused it, processed it. Now we have an experimental analog to what we thought was the weaving parameters. Well, the weaving parameters are never published. And so what happens is that, initially in our model, you assume a one-to-one tension ratio between the weft and the fill. Well, that yielded results that were not correct from a stiffness perspective, as well as a crimp angle perspective. So as we adjusted the virtual weave angle to a 6:1 is what we ended up finding out was the right way to reproduce the architecture on this particular geometry. And you can see by the stiffness predictions that the 6:1 ratio was much better. So again, this is sort of a virtual processing path to getting you to the right solution. As long as you know the input properties for your construction, you can get a pretty good result. There was another subtle issue here, though, and this is actually determining what properties to put into the toes. Overall, the 3D architecture laminate had higher fiber volume fraction than your typical ASTM assumed properties, which would be 60%. So overall, we had a higher property set. We also noticed experimentally, as well as our predictions, that there was a difference between the warp and the weft toe fiber volume fraction. So we came up with a methodology of scaling your ASTM input properties, your 60% unidirectional properties, and throwing them in there. So Kevin came up with an idea of using Chamas's equation. We'd like to use something else eventually, but this was a very quick fix, and we were under a time constraint to get some data out. So this is how he approached this. So he matched the scaling factor of Chamas's equations to what we knew was the volume fraction and the warp versus the fill direction. Just noting, though, that this is only scaling elastic properties. Strength and fracture were not scaled because it's a little challenging to do with those equations. So the next step would be to go and do some elastic homogenization to verify that we're doing well against experiment. And so our model, this independent mesh method model, offloads you from your meshing constraints, but it also gives you a problem that you don't have matched nodes on face-to-face. So they basically added these extra layers on the outsides, made those periodic, and applied year six periodic kind of loading conditions to acquire the homogenized properties. And as you saw from the previous chart, that ended up working pretty well. So they did that. The results are pretty nice. Poisson's ratio is very, very low, so any error at all, you get a really big difference. But the rest are not too far off from the experimentally measured homogenized properties. This will become important in the open hole stuff I talk about in a few minutes. All right, so it is not advancing. There we go. Unnotched strength. So Kevin went on to use this thing, the what he calls PCM periodic. What did he call it? Sorry. Anyway, whatever, the PCM method. I forgot what it's called now. Anyway, so he used that to apply appropriate periodic boundary conditions in the unnotched. The real test specimens were 25 millimeters wide. Our warp direction, as you can see here, is only 11. And so he decided to make this and this periodic while he loaded in this direction. But in the fill direction, loaded in this direction right here, the width is approximately what you would see in the real test specimen, so he did not make that periodic boundary. So jumping right into looking at the warp direction predictions versus experiment, you see that we match the load displacement curve reasonably well. We have a knee here, and these little dots, by the way, are the predicted value or predicted cross sections here. Kevin just chose some representative areas there. And the color scheme is consistent throughout the presentation. This greenish color is neat resin failure. The blue is toe debonding, or what we would call delamination, a UD laminate. Black are matrix cracks using our XFEM cracking method, and the orange is the fiber fracture. And what you'll see in this, compared to the final failure of an X-ray CT version of this, is that there's this sort of tilt here. There's very little damage out this way in terms of fiber fracture, and what you see here is very similar. What this amounts to is that because we have a lot more crimp angle, you're getting a lot more matrix damage as those warp toes try to straighten out, and then it finally catastrophically fails in the fibers. Contrasting that to the largely more straight fill toes, we match very well the low displacement curve. But here we're starting to accumulate early on some fiber failures in the straight toes, and then you get a much more almost brittle, almost straight fracture. So we're pretty happy with those results. Then we moved on to the open hole tension prediction. And what we did was we took a larger instantiation of the simulation, the VTMS virtual processed simulation for these. You can see the 38 millimeters, which is the test specimen width, versus 25 here. And in both these cases, we're loading in this direction. This is just a quick little segmentation of it so you can see it. Each of these were placed into a global local model where what I just showed you there is this center region, the orange and green. And the orange is allowed to have damage, the green has no not allowed to have damage, and the blue is the homogenization that came from that periodic cluster method. So that's how both of these models worked, and I'll show you the results. One thing I'm really amazed at this is these were all blind tests. The experimentalists hadn't been conducting the tests at the rate that we were actually getting the models out. So the results, I think, are actually quite stunningly good, considering the complexity of it and the blind nature of the test versus experiment. Very happy with that. And so I think I have time to show these videos. So we'll just watch the accumulation of damage here. Again, the color scheme, greenish is matrix pocket damage, if you will. The blue is delamination between toes and matrix. Black is matrix cracks, and orange is the accumulation of the fiber failure. And so what you see is massive amounts of damage that happen in the matrix, but what you'll see next on the warp direction is much more massive damage, and then a localization of that fiber fracture into essentially almost one go there. Let's see if this works. This one is only showing the toe fracture process, so ignoring all damage in the matrix. It was simulated, we're just not visualizing it. Just the matrix cracks inside toes and just the fiber failure fracture. And what you'll see is that it's much more diffuse. This is again coming from the fact that you have a lot more crimp angle, and so you're getting a lot more massive amounts of matrix damage everywhere, and so you can see how that progresses through. So I'm right at 12 minutes, so in conclusion, we've developed this process into performance simulation scheme using these tools mentioned here. We did pretty well both notched and unnotched. Our future work is to look at compression and maybe processing-induced flaws, because we have customers who are interested in that aspect of it. And then actual how to bond this together. I forgot to put on here, this is also potentially a feedstock into homogenized models that would allow the prime contractor on the Southwest Research to do sensitivity studies on what matters in the weave architecture to the final product. So with that, I'll conclude and take any questions.
Thank you, David, for this interesting work and amazing results. Maybe I can start just with a question on the computational cost. What's the computational cost of such models? Is it
very high? I don't know the exact numbers, but this was run on a pretty decent HPC system at University of Texas Arlington. I think it was maybe an overnight or a two-day run on that.
You had very nice correlation with your open hole test. In one case, it was underpredicted, one overpredicted. Can you comment on that one?
Almost certainly not. No, Michael. To diving deeply into that is a challenge, especially when it's a multi-body problem. The X-ray CTs are being done by one organization. The models are done by another. We're budget limited, so there's some X-ray CT issues going on. I don't know if I could cogently comment on it. I'm sorry.
Thank you for the presentation. Just a question, considering open hole plate, we have seen many presentations where the effect of the diameter of the hole is strongly affected if you have lots of damage around or not. In your case, you have demonstrated that you have many damage around the hole. Have you tried to perform tests and compare with the model with different diameter of hole, and what kind of evolution do you expect?
It's an interesting question. We have not planned that. Again, the comment I made to Michael about budget limitations have really restricted us on this. The available material is scarce. It's hard to get. And the budget for testing is a little low. So I don't know if I could really comment on what I would expect to see. Do you have any cogent thoughts on that one? Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah. Probably. Okay.
Thank you. Very interesting presentation and excellent results. If I understood properly, the first damage was in the matrix pockets between the bundles. I wanted to ask if it is so. Which kind of damage is that? I guess it's a distributed damage, and which kind of damage law was assigned to the matrix? Thank you.
That's a really good question. So in the open hole work, when I looked at the results, I saw a tendency to have transverse matrix cracks in the toes showing up first, followed by the matrix pocket damage. In the unnotched, exactly as you say, tended to be the matrix pockets. The matrix pockets were modeled using a CDM law like we have in our fiber toes. We have a new version of our XFEM that allows for multi-crossing cracks in the same element. We are eventually going to try that. The challenge before in using that in our codes is that if a crack grew around a toe and then hit itself, it would crash the model because we didn't allow one XFEM to cross itself. Now we do, but we haven't test-driven that yet.
Okay, we can thank David again.
Thank you.